Continuing the summary of Christian Science practice in Science and Health from page 385. Gordon Brown.
We were at the point where we can do whatever it's our duty to do without harm to ourselves. And that means to say that we can be a law to ourselves. Page 385, down there, line 23. Our mind decides whether or not flesh shall be painful, swollen, inflamed, etc. Because body, as inert matter, is unintelligent and cannot inform us about itself. That it can, turning over to 386 at the top there, that it can do this is an illusory dream of mortal mind. And then the treatise on temperature, atmosphere, fever, rheumatism, colds, catarrh, etc. continues. Belief, line 12, not the state of the climate or atmosphere produces catarrh. Remember that wonderfully helpful paragraph about the atmosphere that comes in Miscellany 265. Eddie says that the atmosphere of the human mind, when cleansed of self and permeated with divine love, will reflect this purified, subjective state in clearer skies, less thunderbolts, tornadoes, and extremes of heat and cold. Exactly what we're feeling about this part of the practice chapter, isn't it? What we need then, obviously, is the true Christly temperament, with all its elements of unselfed love and so on, in order to live in a properly balanced and moderate mental and spiritual climate or atmosphere. Then we won't suffer anguish, on line 19, on account of believing that something is true which is not true, such as believing a blundering dispatch announcing that a friend has died who has not died. Error, departure from truth, not truth, when no such departure has ever taken place, produces all the suffering on earth. Line 25, so that mourning is really causeless. 28. There being no departure from truth, there can be no death of life. No departure from truth, no death of life. Our friends have not gone anywhere, even though, to mortal sense, they've passed temporarily from our sight. Therefore, no real cause to lament. And why no death? Over on 387, because life is immortal mind, which cannot be overworked. Line 5, is ever active, has limitless endurance, whose energies can never wear out. Therefore, in human experience, no softening of the brain due to keeping mortal mind active. The thing is to be always at rest in truth. Line 11, which is the activity of immortal mind. Truth, the activity of immortal mind. In thinking, line 13, we perform the natural functions of being. Under the law of life, life little l, line 22, we can't be punished by death for being thinkers and doing good. Labors of love, line 23, strengthen rather than weaken us. And we come to the topic of Christian history, the marginal heading for the next three paragraphs. The history of Christianity, spiritually speaking, is of course the history of good deeds, labors of love, supported and protected by man's heavenly Father, omnipotent mind. Down on line 29. You see, if in Christianity man does not labor selfishly, then his body cannot suffer. His body is the one Christ body. Christianity itself is mind, the one Christ mind. And it's about Christian martyrs, as we turn over to 388, whose labors of love, of course, make up the real history of Christianity. Now, these were prophets of Christian Science. They were prophets of that which explains, says the text, the victory which truth gave them over the corporeal senses. Christian Science is that which explains their victory. Now, of course, on line 7, the Apostle John was the preeminent prophet of Christian Science. Just think of the book of Revelation. That dire inflictions coming apparently from outside failed to destroy his body, says the text, is the basis of Christian Science. The science of one mind only, not more than one mind, line 9. Idolaters believing in more than one mind, minds many, gods many, thought that they could kill his body with matter independently of mind. Line 11, as if mind and matter were two separate entities. And the next two marginal headings, sustenance spiritual, God sustains man, begin a long treatise on food. But it isn't really a different idea that's coming, just a different symbol. Because as with John's outside inflictions, so food put into man from outside him can neither kill nor affect his absolute life, line 22, because this is self-sustaining. No outside to the absolute, on which life, capital L, depends for life, little l. And that's why all material health theories on line 17 are ambiguous, self-contradictory, self-destroying, a kingdom divided against itself. The sense of here being dependent on and governed by what is there. But in soul, line 25, there isn't there, it's here, the subjective state of man's absolute life, God. So life, capitalized, made up of the qualities of soul, line 25, the living spirit, 28, is the very nutriment, sustenance, and food of man's life, little l. Life, capital L, is what sustains him. in the perfect day of understanding this, living and eating will be one. Namely, being the living spirit. The living spirit, line 28. But in the meantime, don't stop eating. But rather stop thinking, believing that eating disturbs the harmony of mind and body. Then the marginal heading is diet and digestion. Food digested, well, what must it really be but mind's orderly understanding of its own embodiment. Indigestion is mental, it's to do with mortal mind, line 8, and not at all to do with matter or nerves. Therefore, mind, not mortal mind, spirit, not matter, soul, not nerves, is the answer to indigestion. Indigestion, line 9, is bodily derangement, things out of order, out of relationship, not understood. So that line 19, food laws are a kingdom divided against itself. Under the law of God, food cannot both sustain life and kill it. That it can is ancient confusion. Marginal heading 24. Materialists contradict their own statements. Indigestion seem to result from confusion and contradictions going on in thought, trying to understand science by the disorderly habit, for example, of taking ideas out of context. Well, this belief in good and evil has got to totter to its falling before the battle axe of science. And that means our need is to eat of the tree of absolute life, we had on the opposite page, and not of the dualistic tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which is, of course, the tree of death. So that case of convulsive indigestion at the bottom of the page, line 28, that developed into chronic liver complaint, line 30. Now, the case healed in a few minutes. That means that all that sense, that long sense of chronos or time, eliminated. Convulsion, violent agitation. Agitation to shake, to discompose. So let's have no violently agitated relationships, no outside and inside violently at variance with one another, then no indigestion when we are spiritually composed, when our identity is composed of the elements and qualities of spirit. The result, 390, physical healing. My food is all digested, and I should like something more to eat. All because, fundamentally, line 4, life is self-sustained, that is to say, absolute. Now, this true state of body, says the text on line 5, is the everlasting harmony of soul, or again, the understanding of principle. And the result is the joys of soul, line 11, that come with this wholeness of truth. Instead of all the pains and pleasures of sense which result from the body being discomposed, breaks and disturbances and disorder in its composition. Then that lovely sense of divine science on line 13, where the human is in the embrace of the divine, disputing sense testimony, which is of course that of the human seeming to exist outside the divine. Well, agree with that adversary, that sense testimony, quickly. Which means to say, as you come down to line 27, agree to disagree with him, to disagree with approaching symptoms of chronic or acute disease, such as cancer, consumption, smallpox, all of which are gnawing, eating away, wasting away diseases. Exert powerful mental opposition to all such inhuman law. Rise. This wonderful feeling of resurrection that comes now. Rise in the conscious strength. It's got to be conscious of the spirit of truth. Over to 391. Because then at the judgment, line 5, truth, Christ, the judge, will say, thou art whole. You, man, are my truth's very own spirit, little s. The spirit of truth itself, the very quality of my spirit's own health and wholeness. So the rising goes on, rising in the conscious strength of the spirit of truth, rising in rebellion against disease, line 8, and therefore rising to the consciousness of life as love, down on line 30. In the process, mind rules out pain that seems to intrude from outside. Suffering from our own sins is, says the text, the only real suffering. Therefore, be sinless within, and no suffering can intrude, thrust itself in from without, that then's got to be ruled out. Mortal mind, not matter, body, that says I'm sick. And if you agree, yes, I am sick, you are mortal mind, judging, sentencing yourself. Line 26, therefore, don't sentence yourself to suffer. But coming down to line 29, contradict mentally every complaint from the body and rise to the true consciousness of life as being love, line 30. Because when life is love, life bears the fruits of spirit. But when life is fear, then it bears the fruits of sickness. So 392, let mind master fear and sin and so overcome disease and death. All bodily ailments result from having supposedly broken moral laws. That is to say, from truth, little t, having supposedly broken away from truth, capital T, and having become error instead. Now, outweigh this error with truth, little t, itself, line 8, and so readjust the balance for God. Every physical affirmative must be mentally negatived. Lines 11 to 12. Nerves in the marginal heading neither speak nor communicate. So don't believe, don't think. Nerves are weak or inflamed. Line 15. Stop thinking that disease can be inherited. Stop deciding that climate is unhealthy. Let science, line 20, show you otherwise. In other words, stand porter at the door of thought, line 24. Refuse to admit, refuse to let in the wrong thought, the nerve message. Forbid the wrong entrant. Control your body harmoniously, line 26, by admitting, letting in right conclusions only. Shut out unhealthy thoughts and fears. Exclude errors from mortal mind, and then the body, line 31, can't suffer from them. Because as we turn over to 393, there's nothing more important than to realize that mortal mind is simply a state of ignorance. Mortal mind is ignorant of itself, line 5, of its own actions, of the results of these actions on its body. Fourthly, that its own so-called law is the cause of all bad bodily effects. It's just ignorant of the lot. Remember how it's ignorant that what it calls matter and believes is objective to itself is what it calls matter is in fact the subjective state of its own thought. Self-ignorance. Body, matter, line 4, not self-acting. Mortal mind is self-acting. So, line 10, we exercise our God-given mind authority over the sense evidence that body matter is self-acting. Mind itself is all action, omni-action. So conquer sickness, sin, and death by taking conscious possession of the body and governing its feeling and action, says the text, line 11. Because body is not really there and mind here. Begin to be mind in conscious possession of its own body. Therefore, rise in the strength of spirit in order to do this, line 12. Rise in the strength of the mind that knows its own subjective state to be spirit and not matter. All the body's feeling and action is in the body's mind, not in the body itself. Tense, stretched nerves are just like wires conducting electricity. Down there on line 23. We're on page 393 now, aren't we? Think of what is called the tensile strength of a piece of copper wire. The more you stretch it, the more it heats up and weakens until it snaps. Nervous breakdown. The seeming breakdown in communication between mind's ideas constituting mind's body. No such breakdown possible. The light of the body is the eye, says Jesus, and says the text on line 25, and at the same time as that, as we know, he said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. So what we have to do is to let the eye of the body be one mind, single, don't we? Then the whole body of consciousness becomes filled with the light of this one mind. No darkness, no mortal mind ignorance, no breakup into minds many, and therefore no breakdown of communication. The bottom of the page, man, body, not sick because his mind is not sick. And 394, lines 3 and 4, are universal and perfect remedy, that because truth is one universal mind, no sickness in truth, whose whole body, therefore, is illumined by the singleness of its own mind. And because of this, our inherent mental energy, line 6, is our inherent recuperative power. The two are one. Man helps himself, line 12, in the measure that his true God mind stimulates, directs, and controls all the bodily conditions of its own system, which is man himself, line 10. So stand, porter, and don't admit that any bodily condition is outside of mind's control. It isn't. This gives us divine permission, line 26, to conquer discord of every kind with the harmony of truth and love, the jointing, the indivisibility of truth from love, by maintaining individuality as the true sense of universal wholeness, non-fragmentation. Let's maintain individually a true sense of universal wholeness, the harmony of truth and love. Because it is this unity of truth and love, that wonderful compound, truth and love, which is all-powerful life. Line 28. The love that admits only truth is itself life. Feel, therefore, the beneficent influence, line 31, the inflowing of the life, which is truth and love. Truth incapable of fragmentation because it's love. And now, 395, you can speak as one having God-given authority. You can speak as one soul, line 7, mastering the evidence of the senses, as one principle, line 10, curing simultaneously mental sin, physical disease. You can speak as one divine science, line 11, where the human and the divine coincide, and there isn't any outside carnal mind. Therefore, sin, disease, and death disappear. Line 14. Now, that nurse down there on line 18, what she symbolizes, doesn't she, is a state of thought that each of us needs to embody namely, line 20, receptivity to this very truth and love that the text has just been talking about. A nurse, as we know, is one who cares for children who are not her own, or for patients who are being doctored by someone else. Well, in truth and love, there's no man, no patient, but Christ, truth, belonging to and inseparable from divine love. Seeing that, the patient is really the property of divine love that therefore heals him. So let's be an unselfish, non-possessive nurse as regards the Christ idea, and not a selfish, possessive mother. Then there's no quackery. Line 21. Don't see the tumor, cancer, decayed lungs, etc., which the patient believes he feels, and afterwards try through mind to unsee them. This would be quackery, which is defined in the next chapter as having two principles in partnership when we come to it. So mind in relation to, in control of man or body, is of course the truth about brain lobes, line 30, supposedly in control of mortal body. Understanding this, brain lobes can neither kill man, says the text, nor affect mind. But at the same time, it should be and must be seen that a moral offense is really the worst of all diseases. So, 396, efface all images of disease from thought, both for your own sake and the patient's. Stop talking disease, avoid talking disease, and so on in the margin, line 7. Refute sense testimony, line 14, as tenacious false education, 18. Or when the overwhelming weight of opinions on the wrong side teaches that body suffers and matter has sensation. Line 21. In other words, be individual. Be one on God's side, which is a majority, admitting only one mind. Down to 22, 23, exchange the apparent power of belief for healthy, wholesome understanding. 24. The reason mental belief exercises power over physical body is because, of course, mind and body are one and not two. Basically the same thing. Now, among the things to keep distinctly in thought as we come down that page is soul outside, never inside a matter body. Soul is spirit, never giving life and sensation to mortal body. Hence, it's soul spirit itself that has the life and sensation which immortal body reflects. The understanding that breaks the dream of disease, says the text, we come down to line 30, is that divine mind does not form sickness, that matter does not form sickness, the human mind alone forms sickness. Therefore, let mind, capital M, be our mind, which is neither human nor mortal. All this becomes a vital, the vital metaphysical point of seeing how it is that mortal mind affects the body. When we do that, we shall cease to injure those whom we would bless, says the text on line 7. So let's stop admitting, stop thinking, stop believing in the continuance of bodily suffering, line 9. Stand porter at the door of thought. For example, an accident. Do we realize that neither our words nor the accident itself has power to hurt us? Only our thoughts can do this. The accident exists only at the point of thought. So 9:17, declare you are not hurt, but understand why you aren't. In other words, disbelieve in physics. Be faithful to divine metaphysics. Be confident that God is all. 9:21, matter does not exist independent of mentality. And because of this, the waking dream of mortal existence is not more material, 9:24, than the sleeping dream. And therefore, the sleeping dream is not more mental than the waking dream. Because mortal mind and matter, line 27, combine as one and can't be treated separately. If we will cease to believe that mind uncapitalized is compressed temporally within the skull, we'll better understand our true maker and our own manhood and womanhood. At the bottom of that page. And therefore, what we are concerned with, we see as we glance down the next page, 398, are the spiritual life laws, line 9, that inhere in the science of mind. Right down on line 30, the only capitalized terms on the page. The spiritual life laws that obtain in the science of mind, because this first paragraph on 398 contains these three wonderful gospel healings. The dumb and deaf boy healed of epilepsy, where the disease is named. The girl raised from the dead, where the disease isn't named, and the healing, thirdly, of the withered hand, where again the disease isn't named. Involving, in the first one, the relationship of a father, a maker to a son, and in the second, the relationship of a father or maker to a daughter. Cases 1 and 2, if we read the gospel story, Jesus takes the boy and the girl by the hand and raises them up. But in case 3, he restores the hand itself. He causes it to stretch forth itself. In the first case, the boy is as one dead. In the second case, the girl is dead, but really she isn't dead. She only sleepeth. It's hypnosis, that's all. In case 3, the hand is dried up, dead. And we know how the hand is always a symbol of spiritual power that raises us from the dream of death, that is to say, resurrects us. remember the statement, by spiritual power, Jesus raised his body from the grave. Now that boy is healed immediately following Jesus' transfiguration, isn't he? Which is an event of the same spiritual value as the resurrection itself. Epilepsy, seizure, to take possession of by force. See, the transfiguration, the vision of true possession, the Son possessed by the Father, my beloved Son, hear him. And the epileptic boy, a state of false possession, the Son possessed by a mortal father. The Father says, my Son. It's error. Separation from truth, being cast out as a dumb and deaf spirit. That's no communication. An in between, something in between God and man. And so Jesus, in the first case, lifts up the body, lifts up the boy who is as one dead. Second case, raises the synagogue ruler's daughter who's not dead but sleepeth, and in the third case gives life to the dead hand. The spiritual power of spiritual life laws operating through the science of mind. No division of son from father, no division of manhood from womanhood, no mortal procreation. Life, deathless, because one and indivisible. That's the spiritual law of life. No mortal mind, no matter, no mortal body. Only mind, spirit, soul. Change is the great topic here, isn't it? Lines 18, 26, 29. Change produced by homeopathy, change produced by faith, even by hypnotism. But at the transfiguration, Jesus' appearance and form appears changed spiritually. Translation, Mrs. Eddy says, brings about man's changed appearance and diviner form, visible to those beholding him here. What a sense of the transfiguration. That's change wrought by the science of mind, which says the text works a radical change, a radical cure. Science of mind, true origin. Who is our maker? That gets to the roots. It's a radical cure, the roots of the problem. So that over the page 399, God good is infinite all, therefore no evil. And then from the topic of those certain material combinations, line 3, claiming to produce disease, different coming together of different events and circumstances and so on, we come to the subject of nerves again, line 13, where mortal mind is both the service and the message and the messenger of all the telegraphic dispatches supposedly sent over the body by talking material nerves. Nerve, talking serpent. But on line 14, nerves as matter unable to talk. Without the force of primitive mortal mind, line 20, the body is dead, devoid of action, can't talk back to us. hence so-called mortal life, isn't matter, but mortal mind. But immortal mind, being the only actor, line 15, therefore no unconscious, automatic matter mechanism, line 16, whether that appears as a corporeal body or a machine. What seems to be automatic mechanism is, says the text, primitive mortal mind perpetuating its own thought, line 16. And then this lovely phrase, line 23, scientifically speaking, only the one immortal mind, not nerve, not serpent, speaks scientifically. It voices no mortal opinions. Its body is made up of its own scientific speaking, its own science of mind, and not of talking nerves. So in science there's no body of material beliefs made out of mortal mind. Line 23-24, mortal mind is only a false sense of that which has no sense, namely matter. 26, which really means to say that it's a false sense of self, a false sense of what the self really is. And therefore, at the bottom of the page, the need to bind mortal mind as the so-called strong man, 31, in order to spoil his goods, in order, page 400, to heal the body. First, bind mortal mind as that which directly controls the body. Fear and disease being one, destroy the one and you destroy the other. You hold mortal mind in subjection by understanding that mind is one and immortal. And this despoils the strong man of his goods, that is to say, of his false gods, his false personal possessions, acquisitions. So acknowledging in this way the supremacy of divine mind, line 10 eradicates, that is, uproots the image of disease from the perturbed, the deeply disturbed, unconscious thought before it takes shape in conscious thought or body, line 14. Every disease is an error. That is to say, a breakaway from truth. But no error, no breakaway of truth, little t, from truth, capital T, therefore no disease. So, in the margin, line 22, we've got mortal mind controlled. Body simply outpictures the images held in mortal mind. But man as the true idea of body images forth the activity of this body's own immortal mind. Sinful thought, line 31, has baneful, that's to say murderous, influence on body. Therefore, 401, don't cherish evil passions and malicious purposes, but let these disappear painlessly in a process on line 8 of chemicalization, or line 12, fermentation, just as in chemistry, when an alkali destroys or neutralizes an acid, thy nine. In science, the alkali is just a symbol of the truth of being, whereas the acid corresponds to error. And the result? The transformation of error. 9:10, producing painlessly a higher manifestation. Chemicalization, line 16, is the upheaval produced when immortal truth is destroying erroneous mortal belief. It's like a fermenting fluid where impurities are brought to the surface of consciousness and are forced to pass away. To ferment, to seethe. Chemical change with effervescence is to seethe internal excitement, agitation. Golly, think of today's seething world, or what seems to the senses to be a seething world. Or think of Ezekiel's seething pot. Remember the story in Ezekiel 24, whose scum is brought to the surface. She, Israel, the world, hath wearied me, God says, with her lies. Her scum shall be in the fire, brought to the surface to pass away into its nothingness. It's certainly seeming to be something as long as it can lie hidden below the surface. So again, all action is mental action. Line 22. Remove mind from body, and a drug has no effect whatever on either brain or body. Brain, cerebrum, cerebellum. Cerebrum, the large mass of brain, seems to be the seat of voluntary, conscious mental processes, whereas the cerebellum is the small part of what's called the hind brain, coordinating muscles and bodily equilibrium, and therefore seeming to have to do with involuntary and unconscious mental processes. And then the topic turns to surgery. In the marginal heading, line 29, broken bones, dislocations. In Christian Science, mind is the surgeon. But until you understand the efficacy and supremacy of mind, says the text on line 27, until you realize that there are not two realms, one mental, the other material, but that all is mind, it's better to leave broken bones and so on to the surgeon. And as a mental healer, be concerned chiefly with mental reconstruction or the prevention of inflammation. But the time is going to come when it is realized that there aren't two realms. And that is where we would come to Christian Science. Christian Science is wholly mental surgery over on 4026. Which does heal broken bones, dislocated joints, spinal vertebrae. Well, isn't the answer to broken bones the fact that no breakage can occur in the system's basic structure, underlying basic structure? To dislocated joints, no disjointing of harmonious relationships, no removal of identity from one locus to another. And spinal vertebrae, no disruption, a fundamental scientific order, the spinal column, the candlestick order of the synonymous terms, the science column of the system's matrix structure. Spinal column, the science column of the matrix. So no corporeal, structural, and material basis, line 9, but rather, by implication, the scientific structure of the system of one mind. That's to say, mind and its formations apprehended in science, line 10, where mind is the life of man, and therefore its formations, man, are indestructible and eternal. Because mortal body is constructed out of mortal mind's own mortal materials, it manifests simply what mortal mind believes, for example, a broken bone. So what we have to begin to realize as we come down to line 22 is that we govern our own bodies, in contrast to the evil of mesmerism in the margin, which says that we don't. Because everything is one mind, don't be mesmerized into believing that one human mind can influence another human mind and in this way affect the body. Let's learn to act only voluntarily and not believe that we can be acted upon involuntarily. Don't be handled externally. Handle yourself. It really means be your own surgeon. Surgeon from the root hand and work. Then no dislocations of mind's formations. It's only under hypnotic suggestion or because of hypnotic suggestion that you believe you can't act voluntarily. Therefore, be instructed by science, by spiritual understanding, that is on line 28, out of all such belief. All this involuntary hypnotic control is belief only. There's no such thing as mind and matter. Mind here, matter there, or vice versa. No such thing as conscious individual mind here, unconscious collective mind there. No such thing as one human mind here, another human mind there. All is one mind. Therefore, no mesmerism or hypnotism. And therefore, says the text 403, it's that the sick, through their beliefs, induce their own sick conditions. And involved in all this belief stuff are two kinds of mesmerism. And perhaps here we're really at the very heart of the chapter. There's what's called voluntary mesmerism on the one hand, where we seem to allow ourselves to be mesmerized objectively, induced, where things are induced consciously. And this, says the text, rightly causes suffering. And it's where it's a mental illusion, a mental illusion, and therefore has the accent on sin and it's where the human mind is employed to deal with it. But the other kind of mesmerism, involuntary mesmerism, is what the text calls self-mesmerism, subjective, all due to the ignorance of what the true psyche or self is. And this mesmerism is induced unconsciously. And what we have to do is to learn from our ignorance and the mistakes we make regarding this. Because here, what we seem to have is a material effect. That means that the accent is on disease, and therefore matter is appealed to deal with it on line 11. Well, both these kinds of mesmerism originate in the same self-deceived, self-mesmerized human mind, line 12, and therefore both situations are healed by the one divine mind. Mind which knows itself is not self-deceived, not self-mesmerized, not self-ignorant. And because of this, on line 14, we can learn to command the situation. Let's understand that the whole of mortal existence on line 15 is a state of self-deception, self-mesmerism. That mortal mind is wholly a state of self-ignorance. Ignorance that matter is its own subjective state, so that it enthrones matter as reality, objective to itself. Now, when truth, capitalized truth, deprives error of all this imaginary, hypnotic power to fool us, then, says the text, line 21, a Christian state comes into being, and that, of course, takes the place of this state of self-deception up there on line 15. This Christian state of rectitude, spiritual understanding, that is to say of uprightness, undeviating adherence to moral standards, this state of true self-knowledge, science, mind knowing itself to be spirit, soul, subject, object, one identity, and so on. This Christian state of self-knowledge, instead of this state of self-mesmerism where mortal mind is ignorant of itself. Now over to 404, because unless false appetites, for example, alcohol and tobacco, are abandoned voluntarily, consciously, there's bound to be suffering. Don't be self-deceived into believing that there's pleasure in false appetites, line 8, or that they can't be controlled consciously. Because sin and sickness are one, a corrupt mind is manifest in a corrupt body. If you sin, says the text, you will suffer. Lust, malice, are diseased beliefs. So let's destroy the wicked motives that produce lust, malice, and so on. And we destroy both the beliefs themselves, the sin which is mental, and their disease effects, which are physical. It's a question of God's law of reformation, line 15, that must cancel the crime. Evil is finished in the repentant mortal mind. Think of the Magdalene. No physical effect left on the individual.